States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. On this week's program, we have part one in a two-part series, which was taken from the 2013 Adequan USDF Annual Conventions educational session entitled Equine Rehabilitation and Preventative Care. Annie Morris returns with another training tip. This week, the topic is the rein back. But before all that, we have one item of news this week. Scott Hassler and Ingo Pape hosted a demonstration at the USDF Sport Horse Prospect Development Forum, presented by Dressage at Devon. Willie Arts, who is the head trainer of DG Bar Ranch, also provided instruction on safe lunging methods. The program, which is designed by the USDF Sport Horse Committee, is focused on developing a consistent and logical training program for the three-year-old dressage prospect and to bridge the gap between the education and competition programs that the USDF provides for young in-hand horses and what the USEF offers for 4 to 6 year olds. And now for part one of our two-part presentation on equine rehabilitation and preventative care. This presentation is taken from the 2013 Adequan USDF Annual Convention.
My name is Kirsten Johnson, and I am the owner of Kesmark Equine Sports Medicine and Rehabilitation Center. I've been doing equine rehabilitation for more years than I like to admit, 20 plus years now. I started my work in Texas, and it has been an ongoing evolution with veterinarians from all over the country. I started in Texas, and I have vets now that come to me from all over the world, but it was interesting because when I began, it started as a need. It started as I had a horse that needed, and there was no one that did it. I put the first AquaTread in the state of Texas, but before I did that, I contacted every veterinarian that I knew, and I said, you know, in human medicine, you wouldn't consider having surgery. You wouldn't consider having, after an injury, you wouldn't consider not going to rehab. It's just what happens. And in the horse, it's a boarded specialty. I'm hoping that there's going to be more and more science behind it. At this point, my experience is with the many, many, many years and the countless horses that I have rehabbed with the attending veterinarians. So every horse at the facility has a veterinarian attached to it. I have no veterinarians on staff. It works well for me that way because I'm sitting here in Lexington with two of the largest hospitals in the world, more vets than you can count. And if I had a vet on staff, it just recently became a boarded specialty. And there are few boarded clinicians in equine sports medicine rehabilitation, but not that many really yet. The approach that we take will go through today, and it is something that I'm excited about it moving forward, and I'm excited about more research being done all the time. But I will tell you that we see a significant difference in the outcomes, and we see horses come back from injuries that I think would be pretty tough to bring them back from, and we'll talk about that. So we're going to talk about equine rehabilitation and preventative care of the equine athlete. At the facility, we are all under one roof, and this time of year, people come to the facility and see that, and they think that it's because of the weather. And as you will understand towards the end of this, it's really has nothing to do with the weather. It has to do with mental control. When you have these high-end athletes, and I have athletes from all disciplines, but when we have a high-end athlete that has had an injury, has maybe had to have the stall rest, is not doing their regular job, I think the worst place for them to be is in the training setting because they get frustrated. They don't understand why they're not being ridden and why they're being stall rested and everybody else is going out and working. So we, under one roof, have a swimming pool. It's a circular pool. We have an AquaTread. We have an Equigym. Those three therapies are all in one room. So that room is temperature controlled year round so that we can keep these horses moving all the time. I have an indoor jogging surface, walking surface. I use the TheraPlate quite often. You know, there's the two, there's the vibrating platform and there's the TheraPlate. I've had both. I've gone to the TheraPlate. You know, I endorse it because the horses that I deal with, I think that it has a little better application. I know you can grow a ton of foot with that thing. I know that it stimulates a lot of circulation, and it's been a really great tool. My cold saltwater spa is in ground, and we'll talk about why that is. And of course, I also have hyperbaric oxygen therapy. I had the second chamber for horses in the world when I was in Texas. Doug Herthel at Alamo Pintada had the first one, and we'll talk about that later as well. You know, the pool is about 300,000 gallons. It's 16 feet deep. It's a circular pool, and I have a circular pool for a reason. It's a soft slope into the pool. It's amazing how well horses do in the water, and even horses that have never swam before, people are always concerned. I have a hunter right now that the lady swore he would never get in the water. I said, he'll get in the water. He'll be fine, and he is. He's super. This is a very good cardiovascular workout. There are injuries. It's not that one or the other is better. There are simply injuries that are one is better in the aqua tread and one works better in the pool. Okay, the swimming pool versus the aqua tread. Like I said, one is not better than the other. And depending on the injury is how the veterinarian and I decide and the staff decides which way the horse is going to go. If you have hind suspensory problems, most of your horses don't get injured early in their careers. They're going to get injured as they move on and as they go forward and as you're asking them to do more, of course. And it's hard to hurt a horse that isn't gifted because they get hurt because they are gifted. That's what happened. For the hind suspensory issues, I do a lot of sport horses. I probably have 70% of the horses in my barn right now are Grand Prix jumpers and very high-level sport horses. With that said, I deal with a lot of hind suspensory and soft tissue injuries. I feel like the swimming pool, I know that the swimming pool is a better application than the aqua tread for that specific injury. The aqua tread is great for front end problems. When they're in the aqua tread, they're pushing pretty hard behind. And so because of that, that's why we put them in the swimming pool. People have concerns with movement in the swimming pool, and I completely understand that. I swim in the summertime about 85 to 90 horses a day. So I get what happens with swimming. And I think that you certainly have to look at the individual. You have to look at his conformation. And it isn't that these are tools. The swimming pool is not the cure. It's a tool to get a horse from one point to another. The aqua tread, we often, depending on the injury, the aqua tread is a great modality if a horse has had a long stall rest because you can slowly bring them up. When they hit the end of the pool, they don't kind of swim. A horse is going to really have to swim, and that's fine. I have never had a great athlete that wasn't a great swimmer, whether they're a Grand Prix jumper. The Hackney ponies, if there's ever swimming races, I have the best Hackneys in the country. I know what I'm getting for my swimming races because they can out. All of the gated horses hack in the pool, whether it's a saddlebred, a standardbred, any of those naturally gated horses, Tennessee Walkers and the Hackneys, they fly. They make a wake. They could pull a skier. It's hilarious. I had five this summer that none of them had injuries. We did it solely as conditioning. They came in before Louisville, which is the world's championships for one major trainer. And he said, I had done quite a bit of work for him. And so he said, go ahead and swim these ponies, get them ready for me. He picked them up 2 weeks before the show. Four were world champions. And one ended up being a reserve, and he said it was all politics. So these ponies did extremely well, but they're amazing in the water. Swimming is kind of like jogging laps in a PE class. You will have your A, B, C, and D students. Most of the horses that have a type A personality and love their work, they really enjoy the pool. It's something that really gets a lot of that energy out of them, and they really like it. The aqua tread is more of a game. I've never seen anything in all my years in the horse industry that horses enjoy more than the aqua tread. The pool can be work. The aqua tread they don't think is work. Once they are used to it, the aqua tread is a great way to build a top line. It's a great way to build strength. And I think that it is really appropriate for the movement that you guys want to do for your horses. We also have horses that will aqua tread one day and swim the next, aqua tread 3 days a week, swim one. There is no absolute protocol. Every horse is different. And what I do is I look at the injury, I talk to the trainer or the owner and the veterinarian, and we try to put a program together that's best for that individual's personality first, injury second, you know, what is the outcome that everybody wants. But water therapy is a great way to keep a horse to a level of conditioning. Of course, we have our indoor Eurosizer. We use it just for walking. That's a cool down and a warm up. I've done a lot of high-end thoroughbred racehorses, and everybody comes into the facility and thinks that, you know, we have this system for loading just because it looks like it's a racehorse situation, and I say, guys, you have no idea. the sport horses, the dressage horses that I've done, they have a long stall rest, and we get them a little bit fit in the pool, and then you take them out in arena and you saddle them. Trust me, they will take the entire arena. They can do some amazing things athletically. That's why you guys have them. We can do the tack walking if it's necessary, because sometimes it is. After some of these soft tissue injuries, I've had horses that we have put in the water, graduated to tack walking. They've tack walked for 30 to 45 days solid, I mean, without interruption. So you have to have them in an environment that you can do that safely, and that if something does go wrong in a straight line, you have a lot more control than if you give them a big area. And that's where that works really well. The TheraPlate, we have our system set up kind of like a stock, but it's basically just a padded little box. We have the rope up. I don't even need to put the rope up on most of them. The horses stand in it. You would be shocked how much they love the TheraPlate. Once they get used to it, there are some set protocols for soft tissue injuries. I think that it is hugely beneficial because of the circulation that we get. For foot growth, or if you have any foot problems, it's fabulous. There's a horse right now over in Europe, St. Nicholas Abbey, who's all-time leading money earner in that part of the world for thoroughbred racing. He had a chronic injury, is having a laminectic situation. He's on a TheraPlate with other therapies, but it really is great for the foot. And I feel real good about it. I've seen some great benefits. Also, I think that they're great to have as a warm-up before you go to work. This is something that you take to a horse show with you. They come in two pieces. The front is about 80 pounds. The back is 80 pounds. They're easy to handle. You can set them up in your barn, and I think after a really tough day of work, this is another therapy that you can use, as we'll talk about later with preventative care, to really keep your horses happy and to take some of that soreness out to help the circulation in the foot. After a long van ride, when they've had to stand, the leg is a piston, the foot's not a pump. And so when a horse has to stand, you know, they can get a little ouchy in their feet, and this is a way to really stimulate and get things going. It's not a magnetic plate, it's a circular vibration. So there's the vibe plate, which is up and down, and I've had the vibe plate. And then there's the TheraPlate, which is a circular. They feel so different. You know, there's not a ton of science on the equine side behind either one of them. I'm just going to be honest with you. This is a common sense approach. And when you look at the science on the human side, it's astounding what the vibration therapies on the human side, if you get on PubMed, there's a lot of great research projects. It stimulates bone density and the turnover of osteoclasts. But when you stand on one and the other, I personally like the feeling of the TheraPlate better. I think it's a softer approach, and I think that they're starting to do some research, I think at Colorado State, and it's going to be really interesting to see what comes out of it. But the vibration in general, the research behind either one, it's really a good therapy. The cold salt water spa, I put this in about a year ago. If any of you have seen cold salt water therapy, most of them are in the box system. And it's against my equine religion to put a horse in a box and fill it up with water. I just can't make myself do it. So I knew that I had to have cold salt water. I knew for soft tissue injuries, for foot, for lower leg injuries and cuts and abrasions, to get inflammation out. It is an unbelievable tool. I have seen some amazing, amazing results. I've had horses with horrible lacerations and wounds that we've use the salt water spa, and it's fabulous because it's 900 pounds of sea salt, it's chlorinated, and it's filtered. And on wounds, if it's a wound that is very painful to the horse, they come out, their leg is virtually frozen. You scrub it, clean it, they don't move, they're not unhappy, you wrap it up, you do what you need to do topically, and they're just so much easier to deal with, and they heal so quick. If any of you have lived close to the ocean, I mean, you know what happens. So for wounds, for instance, the saltwater spa and medical honey has been an amazing find. It's one of those things that I have been so impressed with. Hyperbaric oxygen therapy has been around for many years in human medicine. There are 12 conditions in this country that insurance pays for on the human side. We have several chambers right here in Lexington. Basically, when you put the body under pressure and you breathe 100% oxygen, it's the only way to significantly raise the oxygen level in the blood and in the plasma, more importantly. We know it stimulates the immune system. It potentiates antibiotics. We did that work at the Gluck Center. And it's a great adjunct tool. It's only as good as the diagnosis and the medicine it's practiced with. Every horse that goes into the hyperbaric chamber at my facility goes in with a veterinary prescription. We use it for a wide variety of things, and we'll talk a little bit later about that from a standpoint of recovery, athletic recovery. It's used a ton in for human athletes, cyclists, and football players and soccer players. There are people that have their own chambers, so it's a great recovery tool, and I've done more athletes than I can even talk about from a standpoint. They had nothing wrong with them. They were on a tough campaign, and they came just for the chamber, the saltwater spa, and we sent them on their way. It was about recovery, and I think that's something that I'm seeing more of now in the last 2 years than I ever thought I would. It's great. I look at every situation, and I think to myself, what's the worst thing that can happen? I know it will eventually. And men do everything in my power in the design and the way that we set it up so that it doesn't. So that's a crucial part. I just finished a chapter in a veterinary textbook on an overview of equine rehabilitation for Dr. Hank Jan. And I talk about that a lot, and I think it's really important that we all give thought, if any of us are going to have any of these therapy tools, to really kind of do your homework and your research. If you're taking them on the road with you and you have horses that are your own, I think it's, you know, of course so many horses are fine, but I'm really about making these things safe. Keeping horses mentally stimulated and happy. They are not going to be in rehab forever. We are taking them out of their normal situation for a reason, and we're putting them in a controlled setting because they eat when I want them to eat. They sleep when I want them to sleep. And I want them to be in a happy place. Some horses have windows where they can communicate with the other horses. The stallion side of my big barn, you cannot believe how much stallions like each other. They really like to have, I've had 17-year-old warm bloods and 2-year-old thoroughbreds, stallions next to each other. And what happens to them psychologically when they can communicate is a whole lot better, because at the end of the day, horses don't just get hurt. They don't just go take a wrong step. These things happen over time. So most of the horses that come to me have been hurt for a while. They're just great and tough enough athletes. They have to deal with pain. I mean, that's part of being an athlete anyway. But they've dealt with it for quite some time. So by the time they finally break or something gives, I think putting them in an atmosphere where that is nurturing, that is a little more controlled, where they can't be overstimulated, where they're happy. I put them where they're happy in the barn. If it's a social horse that needs to have hands on it all day long and that loves that attention, I'm going to put it in a place where every time one of my people walks by, it's going to get attention. And if it's a horse that really that is not that important to its life, because there are some out there like that, you all know them, then that's going to be put in a place where that is respected in their personality. We try to really understand the horses psychologically, and we have a good nutrition program, but trust me, as you guys know, I have horses sent with their own feed, their own supplements, and that's fine. I mean, it's kind of what everybody feels comfortable. We really do want a place where the injured horse can heal safely, and that's kind of the whole purpose. Our stall design, we have some turnout. I have a round pen that is moved in a paddock. So it's got grass, they eat it, and that's all that paddock is for this round pen to be moved in. If a horse is quiet and the weather's nice, we certainly give them the opportunity to go out and be in a controlled area. And that round pen has been a godsend, and I had it custom made. It's high, it's solid mesh, it's welded, they can't get a foot under it. It's really a great situation. Again, I couldn't find one I liked, so I went to a welder and had one made.
You can hear part two of Kirsten's presentation on next week's episode. And now for Annie Morris's training tip this week on the rein back. Annie Morris is from Columbia, Connecticut. She is a USDF certified instructor through fourth level, a member of the instructor training program's training first level faculty, and a USDF bronze and silver medalist.
First of all, what is the rein back? The rein back is, of course, when your horse backs up. They should be with diagonal pairs, meaning that, for example, the left front and the right hand move together and then the other diagonal pair move together. The horse should remain on the bit, obedient, soft, not getting tight with his head up in the air, for example. And that's what you want in the ideal rein back. And, of course, the rein back is important. It starts showing up in your test when you're riding at second level, but it's all the way up through the Grand Prix, so it's an important thing to teach your horse. You can also use it even if you aren't showing much dressage, but you need to get through a gate. Having your horse obediently back up is a really useful thing for him to do. The reason that the rein back shows up in the tests at second level and above is because it requires a degree of collection. And actually, it improves your degree of collection because you literally move the horse back over his haunches and increase the engagement, which is the carrying power of the hind legs. They don't ask for it earlier just because it's a little difficult for a horse who doesn't understand collection and engagement to do a really correct rein back. But as I said, it's something that is also an obedience exercise, so you can teach it, or you must teach it, before you're already showing at second level. I have actually spoken about rein back a lot with Lennon Gray, and she is very adamant that we all need to practice rein back more. It's such a simple thing. It takes a moment to do it. And it really is an obedience exercise that if you practice it enough, whether your horse has fantastic gaits or mediocre gaits, you should still be able to get a 9 on it in the test if your horse is obedient, if he's relaxed, if the steps are even and the pairs are diagonal and he moves. You can actually do it nearly perfectly if you practice it enough. So whenever I think of rein back, I think of London, and I think of I need to practice this on all my horses every day. So how do you teach the rein back? It's actually very important to teach it correctly. Otherwise, if your horse learns it with tension, then it'll be difficult for him to do maybe for his whole career. It is recommended that you begin to teach the rein back from the ground. Like, for example, when you first meet your horse or you have a young horse, you can ask him to back in the halter, even in the aisle of the barn or in the arena. But what you want to do is not push or jerk on his nose, but push actually on his chest. So he has to think more about his body. You can push with your hand. You can touch him with the whip there. And you should also use your voice so that he understands that you want him to back. Like, you could say to him, back. And that teaches the horse to yield by stepping backwards to pressure on the chest. And the reason you don't want to push on his face or his nose or jerk on him is because, again, that makes the horse lift their head, tighten their back, and even if they end up backing up, it's likely that you won't have the correct even diagonal pairs stepping. Once your horse is really good at backing up from your voice or backing up on the ground, whether he's under tap or not, then you can ask for it when you're on. But I would still recommend, if your horse doesn't know how to rein back yet, that you have a ground person with you in the ring so that they can reiterate the aid from the ground. And again, the reason is that you don't accidentally, in an effort to teach your horse to rein back, teach him to do it tensely, because that, again, will be a problem in the long run. Use your voice, use a ground person, maybe give him some sugar. Make it just like a fun thing. Some horses find, if you ask for the rein back, a little bit like trapping them in front, and that's why some people run into problems with it. You want to be careful that the aids are not pulling back and kicking, because again, the horse will get tense. Maybe if you have a sensitive horse, you can actually get into some bigger problems, like the horse wanting to rear up or something like that. So again, just as diligently and carefully as you can teach it, the better in the long run. And then once you're able to, once you feel like your horse understands the rein back, you can ask from the saddle, maybe with the ground person still there. But what you want to feel is that, again, you're not pulling them back with your reins, but you actually ask the horse to move their leg with your leg. And then you actually kind of catch the energy in your hand and direct it backwards. So that's different than pulling back. In fact, your hand shouldn't necessarily go backwards. They just kind of are there to catch the energy and direct the horse backwards. And that's how you can keep the softness in the back and the relaxation as you ride the rein back. Of course, it's possible you could run into other problems, like a horse who really just doesn't get it and doesn't understand he's supposed to move when you're not letting him go forward. A good way to teach that horse would maybe be to do a turn on the forehand, where you actually keep the front legs near the same spot and you ask the hunches to move around the front legs from, for example, your left leg. The horse would be flexed left. You would be somewhere where you're not near the wall. Push him a couple steps sideways off the left leg. And then, when his feet are already moving, then direct the energy backwards. And then that's a way to at least explain it to a horse who just doesn't understand. And this is something you don't want to just be like, okay, today I'm going to work on rein back, and you do rein back like 10 times in a row. That's going to get the horse a little bit backed off, most likely get him behind the leg. Try to do it intermittently in your ride, like maybe before you take a break or just after you do a halt transition in the middle of your trot work or somewhere else, and make it a little playful. Like, you can go forward, you can go backward. And again, besides the benefit of teaching him to rein back in a relaxed way, it'll actually improve the engagement as you bring his body over his hind legs. And often if you halt, rein back, and then trot again, the engagement in your second trot will be better. If you have any problems, the horse starts to get tight, starts to raise his back, starts to back up in like a scuttling manner instead of in diagonal pairs, the best thing would be to go back to the ground and to build his confidence again. Again, and when you're, whether you're showing second level or Grand Prix, it's like those five little steps are still worth a complete score. And they really give an impression to the judge about the quality of your training. Is your horse obedient and relaxed, or is this something that makes him really tense and worried? And therefore, you can lose a lot of points either. Well, you can lose a lot of points unnecessarily if it's something you don't work on enough. The other thing I wanted to mention about the rein back is, in my opinion, it should not be used as a punishment. Some people would maybe feel their horse trying to run away and think that you could stop them and back them up, and that would keep them from wanting to go too fast or go through you. But what it often does is just creates more tension and also makes the horse worried about the rein back. When you go to do it in the show, do you want him to be worried that you're punishing him? No, you want him to stay relaxed, stay confident, and therefore, if you're having a hard time with your horse running through you, that's like a whole nother subject, but you want to find a way to fix it in a forward way that you don't back the horse off or ruin your chances of riding a correct rein back. Anyway, good luck. Practice the rein back a lot, and that'll improve your obedience, your engagement, and your scores, hopefully from second level all the way to Grand Prix.
You can find a full schedule of educational sessions and other activities that will be held at the 2014 USDF Adequan Annual Convention, which takes place in Boston from December 3rd through the 6th, on the website at usdf.org. And while you're on the website, be sure to visit eTrack, the USDF's online learning center and resource for dressage and equine education. The USDF Connection magazine features an article on L to R in the October issue. And a reminder that the USDF podcast is available for download from the iTunes Store to your smartphone podcast apps. The USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.